Thank you for listening to Ivy Podcast, where we feature weekly leadership conversations with thought leaders and industry experts. Now, here is your host, John Karsibayev.
Hi, I'm Ann Rush, and I am the founder and CEO of ElastiJobs.
And thanks so much for making time to join us on the Ivy Podcast today. Before we dive in and spend a great deal of time talking about what you're currently building with your company, give us a thumbnail version of your career prior to that.
Yeah, happy to. And thanks for having me. I did undergrad at Boston College and ended up staying out here in the Boston area for most of my adult life. After a brief stint in the nonprofit sector, I went to work for Liberty Mutual Insurance, which is a Boston-based Fortune 100 insurance company. I started my career there in HR and held a variety of roles kind of across the HR domain, including people ops, employee relations, recruiting, HRBP type roles. And while I was working, I went back to school part-time, ended up graduating with my master's in management from Harvard. And I had always felt that the best HR people understand the business really well and have actually worked in leadership roles in the business. So after I graduated with my master's degree, I took a role on the business side and worked in operations, leading to fairly large departments there. I then started working on a side project focused on automation. And I loved the work so much that I ended up going over to a team focused on emerging tech. And so I kind of continued to work in both roles within the business, technology, and HR. And while I really loved leading the teams and creating value where I was, I started to get that entrepreneurial bug and think about starting something on my own. And while I was in these leadership roles, I saw a really strong need on the business side for skilled talent on demand, and working with a variety of talent types, including contingent workers or freelancers. So last year I took the plunge and I started ElastiJobs, where I'm kind of taking that technology and HR background to create solutions for independent consultants and companies. And so more specifically, ElastiJobs connects HR freelancers with companies.
Wow, that's super exciting. What a background you have, and I appreciate you sharing that. We have quite some similarities from education aspect and some of the, you know, the work we've done on the HR tech side. So I'm very excited. So tell us a little bit more about what problem are you currently solving with ElastiJobs, and what opportunity do you see in the market these days?
Sure. So I feel like it's a two-sided opportunity, I guess, for opportunity rather than problem. So on the talent side for freelancers, as I've talked with a lot of folks who've gone down the independent consulting path, they've shared they really love working with a variety of clients across a variety of industries, solving problems for their clients. But what I hear fairly frequently, in particular within the HR vertical that I'm focused on, is they don't necessarily love the business development side or, always kind of thinking about who's my next client going to be. And then on the company side, I think more and more the talent market's very competitive right now. Companies need on-demand talent solutions that don't always need to be met by a full-time employee. And but they don't necessarily have a large talent pool to select from. It's often referral or like, who do we know who might be able to help us out? So what I'm trying to do with ElastiJobs is essentially provide a solution to both sides by making it easier for the two parties to connect. So on the talent side, the talent gets access to a wider array of freelancing opportunities. And on the company side, they get access to a wider array of talent, a much larger talent pool than they would have access to with just word of mouth or referrals.
Oh, absolutely. And there's a lot to unpack here with especially the emphasis and the focus on the freelance community, the gig worker contingent workforce. We've seen a tremendous rise in that spectrum, especially in the last couple of years. Tell us a little bit more about that. Why do you think that's happening? And what do you foresee in the next, near term in terms of the opportunities for the freelancers and gig workers in this environment? If you could spend some time talking about this, that would be great.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, we've absolutely seen large growth in the projections, both within the United States and honestly globally, is that the freelancing sector is just going to continue to grow as a percentage of overall workers in the economy. And I think, I'm sure there are a ton of forces at play, but I really think that what we're seeing is a drive for more control over one's career, more control over one's work-life balance. And freelancing often offers that to the talent. So in terms of more control over career opportunities, you can select the projects that you're working on. You select the clients that you're working on. You're often getting exposure to different industries than if you just worked at one company, different types of projects and solving problems for different clients. So it's in my mind, it's great for career development. And I think a lot of people are realizing that it gives them an opportunity to develop more quickly than maybe with just working with one company. The other thing that I think is super important is work-life balance and finding the right balance. And I believe that freelancing really offers that to a lot of people. So you're much more in control of the number of projects that you take on. You're more in control of where you work. So many freelancers are remote only. It really offers that flexibility that I think workers are more and more looking for. The other thing that I think that is happening is companies are more comfortable working with skilled, independent talent. And so the ability to have a career as a freelancer, because companies are more comfortable leveraging freelancers, is there too. So it's just kind of increasing on both sides.
Yeah, absolutely. Those are definitely very interesting trends that you especially you building the company around that particular spectrum of, the labor shortage that we also all been experiencing in the past couple of years.
Right.
Shifting to a completely virtual environment. A lot of companies thought that, that's going to really help, but also competition 10x. So there's definitely a lot of opportunity that you're talking about. Having spent a few years in HR and HR tech, obviously you do a lot of research in that space, and there's a lot of innovation happening, especially on the technology side. Tell us a little bit more about what excites you these days in terms of the technology and HR and the trends that you're observing.
Yeah, that's a great question. And I truly think that all these things are converging at such a great time for us. On the technology side, I think a lot of it has been around enabling a great employee experience no matter where you're working. I think the fact that 2 years ago we all needed to shift to remote work, or at least a very large percentage of companies needed to shift to remote work. You need the right HR technologies in place to enable that. So I think we've seen exciting developments, in particular in the collaboration technology front. So making it easier for employees to connect with one another remotely and in different ways too. So I think that's a great space. Some of the more traditional HR technologies too, we're definitely seeing become more sophisticated, more user-friendly. I think we're seeing consumer grade quality with HR technology, where I think in the past, frequently HR technology was like, behind the scenes, back office, let's spend the least amount of money possible on it. Whereas now it's employee facing and employees want a good experience. So this is the way companies communicate with their talent. This is the way their talent collaborates. This is the way they evaluate performance and receive recognition. So I think, the quality of the experience has definitely increased and the ease of use. So it's definitely been an exciting space in the last couple of years.
Right. Absolutely. So as you partner with organizations of various size, and when it comes to also tapping into the freelance community, gig workers, what are some of the challenges that you see and maybe opportunities to improve when it comes to engaging the freelancers, engaging the contingent workers, whether that's short-term or long-term projects? Just maybe share some perspectives from that standpoint.
Sure. So I think one challenge is, and it's definitely something that can be overcome, but companies don't necessarily think about onboarding the freelancer and making sure that they're set up for success. And I would argue that it is just as important to make sure that you onboard a freelancer as it is a new full-time employee. Oftentimes you can just leverage the same materials that you've created. But the freelancer, for them to be successful, they need to understand what is the company mission, how is their work contributing to whatever the goal is of the overall project. They need to understand who to work with. They need to be assigned I wouldn't call it a mentor, but at least someone to go to with questions. And I think that oftentimes when it's not successful, it goes back to, a company will bring on a freelancer, but maybe not set them up from day one for success with the right tools, org charts, et cetera, for that freelancer to be able to navigate.
Right. Absolutely. Which leads me to the further point. You've mentioned onboarding, which is obviously a very, very, very complicated space, but at the same time, some companies do it great, some not so much. When it comes to onboarding virtually, especially, organizations that, fully dispersed, on a global scale, sure. Yet, they hire the top talents and they have to onboard them virtually. Mm-hmm. What are some of the recommendations that you have for organizations that, you see do a better job at onboarding virtually? Because onboarding is difficult to begin with, but when you add another layer of complexity to do that in completely virtual environment, that complicates things even further. Share some observations, share some recommendations from that perspective.
Sure. No, I absolutely agree. I feel like very few companies that were good at onboarding even pre-pandemic, when there was so much remote work, and now, it's even potentially more challenging. I really think it goes back to making sure that you're investing the time needed to onboard the individual. So, I think there's certainly, especially for, mid to larger sized companies, templates and things that can be created that can provide the foundation of the experience. So information about the company, information about the mission, the vision, goals, org structure, how do teams, fit together and work together to accomplish goals. A lot of that base information is necessary for, you know, across the board and should be put together so that any new employee can kind of get up to speed and learn. And some of the ways to make it more engaging remotely is to intersperse it with videos, maybe set aside executive, you know, like video chats or lunch and learns for new employees so that it's not all just reading, you know, a PowerPoint or reading a lengthy 100-page employee handbook. So I think that's the foundation, right? But then you need to think about, as a manager, you need to think about it at the individual level of how am I going to onboard this individual and make sure that she or he feels welcome. So it's thinking about things like sharing team norms, finding someone on the team that can be a buddy to the new employee, so that they're paired up and meeting on a regular basis. To just answer questions or talk about how to navigate at the company. Making sure that as a manager, you can't do a walk-by each day, obviously, but you can check in each day, whether it's just a quick, you know, hello and check in via Slack, or something more formal, a half hour one-on-one, or you know, conversation. But it's really important to make sure that the individual has contact with you as a manager, with their team members, and with the larger company on a very regular basis as they get up to speed.
Right. Absolutely. Thank you for sharing some of these perspectives. If you are a freelancer, if you are in those shoes these days, maybe share some thoughts around what would you be investing into further in terms of whether that's a particular skill set or a particular network you tap into to really position yourself to what, you know, what's to come next. Obviously, we don't know what it is. But at the same time, to increase your chances to continuously be engaged in different, you know, projects and with different clients, what are some of the things that freelancers can really do these days to maximize their, you know, the opportunities?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, I think it's first and foremost setting up your sort of personal branding and presence online. And so thinking about what are you good at and what do you want to be known for? And how do you make sure that as you post, you know, via social media or potentially write articles in your area of expertise, how do you ensure that all of that kind of supports that you're a thought leader in the field that you're working in. You know, I think it's at each time you work with a client, checking in with them, to see if they're would be willing to provide a testimonial, or at least can you anonymize their company's information and use that as a case study or as an example? So I think it's really important that it's probably not just enough to do great work unless you already have more clients than you can handle and a huge referral network. You also have to, you of course have to do great work. And you also have to be out there and, you know, really talking about your area of expertise and in whatever forum you're most comfortable in, whether that's, again, writing posts, articles, or speaking engagements to kind of solidify you as a thought leader in that area.
Yeah, I think that's such an important area and oftentimes overlooked, the power of a personal brand, the power of even just creating content out there, putting yourself out there. You know, I think that's such an important and very, very solid recommendation. We could probably spend, you know, entire episode talking about those strategies, which is, you know, they're very complex and there's a lot of opportunity there. The other area I wanted to touch upon with you is interviewing, especially in the virtual hybrid environment. You know, it's just like with everything else, adds another layer of complexity. With interviews, just being having, you know, too much emphasis on what are the weaknesses that I can tolerate in that particular candidate versus highlighting what are the strengths that I'm missing on the team and can that particular candidate fill that void. Share your thoughts on how to improve that space. How can, you know, maybe you can set better expectations with the hiring managers, but at the same time to create that two-way street of a conversation between the candidate and the hiring team or hiring managers to really maximize the chances you know, that probability of making an offer and things like that. So if you could share some from that perspective.
Sure. So yeah, I mean, there's definitely an art and a science to interviewing, that's for sure. Whether it's based, honestly, whether it's in person or remote. You know, I do, when it, with it being remote, or if for a company it is remote only, highly encourage video on both sides. It's only fair if you're asking the candidate to be on video that you be on video yourself. And I think over the course of the last 2 years, with so many of our interactions being done via video, we've gotten much better at being able to read facial expressions, being able to, it's still not at the level of face-to-face and in-person, but it does definitely help. I would say another pro, it was probably an unintended consequence of hiring remotely, but it's a positive. And that is, it's oftentimes easier to schedule because things are remote. And so the cycle time can be a bit quicker, which in today's competitive talent market is a huge plus. Of being able to secure that top talent. People are going really, really quick. If they're looking, they're going really quickly. And so the ability to schedule things quickly because it's remote is actually a positive, I think. But, you know, when it comes to interview questions and things, I think that it's honestly the same fundamentals whether you're in person or you're remote. You want to get a sense of how candidates have handled situations in the past that is relevant to the role that you're hiring for. I'm a big believer in behavior-based interviewing. So you're really looking to understand what situation the candidate encountered in the past. What action did they specifically take? A lot of times, this is one area that managers can be encouraged to probe in. A lot of times candidates will answer with a we and talk more about the team's efforts, but you're not hiring their team, you're hiring that individual. So you wanna make sure you walk away with a really good understanding of what actions did that individual take, and then what results did they have? So that's kind of the basic setup with behavior-based interviewing. And it goes a long way. As long as you're thinking about in advance, what skills and experiences do I need for this particular role on day one versus what they can learn? And once I know what they need on day one, then I need to form those interview questions in advance that are going to get at whether or not the candidate has those. And like I said, that's my advice, remote or in person.
right. Absolutely. No, I love these recommendations. And I think just being able to kind of put also emphasis on the importance of feedback, especially from the hiring managers. You know, like you said, when, you know, things move very quick. And those organizations that do succeed in attracting and, you know, the top talent, a lot of them are very good at providing the very timely and very concise feedback to be able to either make the decision quick or move on to whatever is next. So I think those are very important areas that you're highlighting.
Yeah, I would just add to your comment about feedback triggered for me. You know, this is so simple, but so many people don't take the time to do it. And that is to pull all the people together who may have interviewed a candidate and calibrate on that particular candidate's interview. Don't do it via email. Don't do, like, get together, even if it's only for 15 minutes, and talk through it, because I think that you learn a lot from hearing what other people's experiences were with the candidate. And like I said, I know people are busy. And so it's one of those like meetings that might be quick to drop. Oh, we can just do it via email. But I think it's so important.
Right. Absolutely. I love that. And in terms of your content diet, what are the different resources that you consume on a daily basis to keep yourself informed and educated on all the things going on in your industry and maybe even outside of that? Share some of those with us.
Sure. Yeah. So I guess I kind of bucketed into, like, I try to read some that are a bit more academic in the approach. So HBR, Sloan Management Review, Gartner for HR, and then certainly some business periodicals, Entrepreneur, Forbes, Fortune, Wall Street Journal, Business Journal. And then I'd say that another area that's I've found super informative and helpful is, I'm not even sure how to categorize it, but it's, I belong to some Slack channels that are industry specific to me, and just reading some of the ongoing and participating in some of the ongoing conversations in the people and talent space has been hugely beneficial to learn about what people are doing at other companies. I'm part of an open assembly group on the Center for the Transformation of Work. And there again, it's people coming together who are passionate about a particular topic and sharing what's going on in their industry. And I think we're going to see more and more of the, you know, like the crowdsourcing or the open forums for getting information. And that's been a really fun area for me to stay informed.
Right. Absolutely. Love it. In terms of books, what are you currently reading? And is there one book that you always recommend to others? And why is that?
Sure. So I actually, for books, almost exclusively read fiction. I read so many, business periodicals and articles and you know, case studies and things that in my spare time, I read fiction. One of the books that I would absolutely recommend is Americana by Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie. And it's just an incredible, she's number one, an incredible author, and I loved everything I've read by her. She writes very compelling characters that really help you kind of dive in and live the experience that the characters are living. But I select that book in particular because for my own DEI journey and development, really reading about and understanding the perspective. So she's a Nigerian writer, and in Americana, she is writing about what it is like to be Black in America, but not grow up as a Black person in America. And, you know, for me, that I, to be able to read about her, I mean, it is fiction, but it's based off of her experiences, and to be able to read characters that are written with such empathy, and it helped me to get a better understanding of what that experience was like for her. So highly recommend her as an author.
Well, that sounds fabulous, and I appreciate those recommendations. And for our listeners, we'll make those titles available in the show notes. And again, thank you enough for your time today. It was a very short and insightful conversation. I personally learned quite a bit. And what I love doing with all the guests is do a follow-up recording in about a year where we revisit the conversation from a year ago and see if everything we've discussed still makes sense, still applies. So I'm definitely looking forward to doing that with you as well.
That sounds fun.
Thank you for listening to the Ivy Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our RSS feed on ivypodcast.com and all major podcasting platforms like Spotify and iTunes. As always, if you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a rating on iTunes.